of rain, minimal accumulations here this evening into the early overnight hours, clearing out after the rain chance with a low of 35. Mid-60s tomorrow with sunshine, a high of 65. We'll warm up to 74 for Friday, and have sunshine Saturday and 66. That is your forecast on KVOE Live and Local.
Win three large Gambino pizzas in the At Work Network. Register today at kvoe.com/at work. KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM. Live, win free pizza and local. KVOE AM 1400 and 96.9 FM, live and local, presents the On Air Chat. And now, here are your hosts, Aaron Harder and Ron Thomas.
Welcome on this gorgeous Wednesday morning to the On Air Chat. We are brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. For commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more, call Bruce Davis Construction, 620-342-5001. Good morning, Ron Thomas.
Good morning, Aaron. How you doing?
I'm doing great. What a beautiful day.
Yeah, not a bad day at all. Winds died down. Temperatures are upper 60s today, so can't beat that for winter.
Yeah, right? A few more to come, too.
It is, yeah. Winter is still with us, and we're going to hit 70 by Friday. Nice.
Yeah, pickleball courts were packed last night.
Oh, I bet. I bet they were. I bet the golf course is doing good, too, out there.
Yeah, we'll have to ask Marcus how many rounds next Monday when he comes back for the Monday morning quarterback.
Yeah, but this kind of weather, it could be another record-breaking round year.
It could.
For the golf course down south.
But that is not our guest today. Our guest is Lisa Soler, the co-executive director of the Lyon County History
Curator.
Center. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm enjoying the weather also.
Yeah.
Even though Greg peaked at 65.
See what he said this morning, yeah.
He said that this morning, yeah.
Basically, he was coming off, I was giving the weather, and I said, we peaked at 65 yesterday, it was 65 degrees, and Greg came on and says, I peaked at 65 too.
I too peaked at 65, and I was in my office.
He might have peaked a little earlier than that.
Yeah, I don't. All I know is I was still laughing after he got off the
phone. I'm sure you were. I'm sure
you
were.
I was just like, after.
He's pretty sly.
After, smacking my forehead,
sure.
Like, oh my gosh.
That's pretty good, though. That's pretty
it
good.
Was pretty good. Yeah. I mean, like, it was a good day for him.
We give credit where credit is due.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Nicely done, Greg.
So we're going to talk about the Emporia's history.
Yes.
The founding of Emporia.
And really the very beginning of it.
We had an anniversary.
We did.
5 days ago.
February
20th. And it was
20th.
169.
Yeah, 169.
I did the math really quick.
169 is correct.
Yeah, 160. So next year will be the 170th anniversary of Emporia's founding.
Well, let's talk about the founding.
Well,
how did it all get started here? Where did we come from?
All most people remember is Preston Plum.
Exactly. And it wasn't just Preston Plum, even though he was the only one of the five founding fathers who lived here. And, this whole period when Emporia was founded, it's part of that Bleeding Kansas era. And that era has always intrigued me. I had to Google, but I wanted to know because it's so closely attached to the Civil War. And the Civil War is, the American Civil War is something that's always been, written about in movies and documentaries. And there has been between 50 and 60,000 books written on the Civil War. And I have to say, my mother had 900 of them. And we always thought that was a lot until I looked at that there's been, 60,000 books written on it. So I was like, oh, mom didn't have a lot of books. She only had the 900. And so you have this Bleeding Kansas era. And it was basically from the passage of the Kansas-Nebraska Act in 1854 through 1859. Some people extend it to 1861, like right before the Civil War. So you have this Bleeding Kansas era. And I think it's always intrigued me because, I'm a sixth-generation Kansan. I mean, my family came here, one of the, you know, limbs of the tree came in 1861, right at, you know, statehood. The others came a little bit later, in the 1870s and 1880s. But no other state in the Union has the history that Kansas does. No other state does. I mean, the...
Why is that?
It's basically how the territory was established. So you have this somewhat new concept of popular sovereignty, which basically we're going to let, because this huge debate had been going on for decades about the slavery. And so the government had always been, okay, we're going to compromise. So if we allow a southern state in as a slave state, we're going to bring in another state as an, you know, against
bring in
slavery.
One of each.
A free state. Yeah. And so they tried
instead of addressing the real issue.
Exactly. Yeah. They tried to keep this balance. And eventually you can no longer do that. You can't keep that balance. And so when they passed the Kansas-Nebraska Act, it was, we're going to let the voters decide. Now, they had done that a little bit earlier with, like, New Mexico and Arizona and that area. They were going to allow popular sovereignty, you know, within it. But they were like, no, we're good. we're going to just stay a territory for right now. And you know, that part of the United States looked very different than what it does today. Okay, so then you fast forward a little bit for the Kansas-Nebraska Act and introducing these territories. And they're like, okay, we're going to try popular sovereignty again. And Nebraska was just like, no, we're still good too. And Kansas was like, yes, we want to become a state. And so you had these people moving from the South. You had these people moving from the New England area. So you have the New England Immigrant Aid Society coming.
So because we were heavy Welsh early, weren't we?
Very yeah. Early, yes. Yeah. They were some of the first settlers that came was the Welsh. And they were coming, they were coming a little bit differently. So if you look at like the Howe family, they came through Canada and then came down to the United States and made their way. Whereas a lot of the people that were part of the New England Immigrant Aid Society, they had been in the United States for a couple of generations. I mean, they had been here for a while and they were moving here. And so all of this is kind of tied in with the founding of Emporia. So you have these people from the East, whether it was Pennsylvania, Ohio, New York, moving here to make sure Kansas was going to enter the Union as a free state. Then you have those Southerners and the border ruffians, you know, those, you know, Missourians that wanted to make sure Kansas was a slave state moving here. Well, anytime, I mean, it was bound to happen that there was going to be a clash, and it happened. It happened with Lawrence. You had these free state settlements popping up to support it, and then you had these other settlements, Atchison and along, you know, closer to the Missouri border, that were popping up as pro-slavery communities. Well, eventually, these people are moving here as part of the New England Immigrant Aid Society, and they're setting up Lawrence. And Lawrence was kind of this mecca for free state. And you had these individuals coming. Well, some of those individuals were passionate about it. They were true abolitionists, and they were going to fight. They were going to bring weaponry in. Well, the minute they started to bring cannons and weapons and guns and that to Lawrence, that made the pro-slavery governments and people perk their ears up and go, "Hey, wait, you're starting your own militia. That's not right. That's treason." And so you had these people like George Washington Brown, who was one of the first people that came here for Lawrence. And helping to bring those weapons in. And then you had General Dietzler, not quite sure, who also was part of the aid society who was sent here. And then a lot of other individuals. And eventually those powers that be, Sheriff Jones, went into Lawrence with 800 pro-slavery people, surrounded Lawrence and said, "We want every single weapon that every townsfolk, you know, everybody has. We want all the weapons." And they're like, "Well, we'll give you a cannon." That'll appease them. And of course, it just, you know, upset them even more, you know, and so they sacked Lawrence. So you always hear about Quantrell's raid,
yeah,
and that sacking of Lawrence where, you know, 150 people were killed, and that was 1863, kind of in the midst of the Civil War. But that first one was, to me, what really spearheaded the change that was happening in the Bleeding Kansas era. So in these people that, you know, not only did they burn the Free State Hotel, which was later the Eldridge Hotel, they burned down Charles Robinson, who ended up being the first governor. They burned his house down. They took all the weapons. They took everything. But they also took prisoners. And there were several Free State prisoners. And two of them that were most notable was G.W. Brown and this General Dietzler, who happened to be two of the five men who started Emporia.
Two of the five guys from Lawrence, right?
Yep. So every single person who was involved in the founding of Emporia was living in Lawrence at the time. And again, their histories were pretty fascinating. But anyway, so they're held as POW, or, you know, in as prisoners of war for several months, and they finally realized they couldn't keep them. The charges were dropped. It wasn't treason. They dropped it. But then I think they also knew they needed to start looking at other locations for new towns to be Free State towns. So not only was it a business venture for these five men, but it was also to start spreading the word of Free State and anti-slavery, and to start getting newspapers. I mean, the press, G.W. Brown started the newspaper, the Herald of Freedom, which had a large platform, was sending it back east, talking about, you know, the fight for Kansas to be a free state. Mm-hmm. Well, so here's this guy, Preston Plum, who's from Ohio. He's working. He owns a newspaper. He's a partner. He knows what's happening. So he comes out to cover the border wars, and he is like, "I think I'm going to get involved." And so now you have another person. You have you have Plum, who's now getting involved, and he's helping bring weapons into Kansas for the Free State cause. And then you have another gentleman, Lyman Allen, who is heavily involved. And another one, and I love his name, Columbus Hornsby.
Oh, great name.
Yeah.
Right.
How is his name not remembered more?
I don't know. Probably because
one of the
he died.
Founding fathers
he died
is
like
Hornsby?
1862, 63. Oh, okay. Like he, yeah. So he died during the Civil War. So maybe that he didn't get to do as much as the others did.
Is he one of the five? One of the
yeah,
five
he's one of the five. Hornsby, so the five I just listed. So you have G.W. Brown, George Washington Brown, who was the president of the Emporia
now,
Town Company.
When these guys sacked Lawrence and they took a couple of these guys.
Yes.
Held them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they didn't get their money, right? So they obviously had some financial.
Their
pockets were pretty full when they came here.
They did, and so in the case of G.W. Brown, he was a lawyer. So he had born in New York, ended up going to Ohio. He went to law school, went to Pennsylvania. And this is in his 20s. At 26, he's like, you know, I don't think I want to be a lawyer. I think I want to go in the printing trade. I want to run a newspaper. And so that kind of how HIDS started. And so he did have these newspapers back east where he probably was able to get money. Plus, he was working with the New England Immigration Aid Society, which had money. So he was able to bring some of that as well. But no, they didn't get the money, fortunately. They just got, you know, a couple of months of their lives being in this camp. So these five guys were like, okay, we need to let's go into business together and let's start. So
we got Brown, Hornsby, and Plum.
Well, and then we also have Lyman Allen and Dietzler.
Oh, yeah.
So we have those five that pulled their money together and was like, all right, let's set out to find this town site. And one of Brown's friends said, hey, there's this place out there. It's the loveliest site for a town in the world. I don't know why he said world, because I'm pretty sure he hadn't gone all over the world. But, you know, hey, you know, football is the world championship, even though we play here. So... So anyway, so they set out. So Dietzler and Brown set out to find the site. And so they followed the rivers. They did, you know, they were traveling. They left Lawrence and they came over the hill. And they some say that they're looking probably around where the country club is. And they saw it. I mean, I don't know if the rays, you know, sun rays came down and the angels sang, ah, but that's where, you know, they're like, it's here. It's between two rivers. It's, this is where we need to put Emporia.
Yeah. And it's, seems a little odd. These guys were fairly worldly, you know, for the most part, but the loveliest place in the world for a town. I love Emporia as much as the next guy, but I wouldn't deem this as the, you know, the vision of the loveliest place in the world
well,
for a town.
You know, I mean,
it's got its loveliness attributes.
It does. And you have to remember, Kansas was probably a shock to their system. They're all from back east, from large cities, from, you know, or smaller cities. And towns looked very different back east than this open prairie of Kansas. That really didn't have that.
Well, they had to traverse. Well, they had to traverse some open prairie to get here.
Absolutely,
you know,
absolutely from Lawrence. I mean, and you know, when I'm going into classrooms and we're talking about the founding of Emporia and communities, which is a third grade standard. So I get to go into, you know, or have field trips with you know the third graders here. I always have them close their eyes and imagine. There are no buildings.
Yeah, you come on a wagon.
There's no Walmart.
There's trees lined along the rivers.
Yeah, there's no businesses. I mean, it's not like they came here and there was already a town pre-existing. They came to open prairie. They came to Native Americans that were in the area, whether it was the Sac and Fox that was in the northeast corner of Lyon, or, you know, eventually they ran into the Kaw or the Kansa that was in the northwest corner in, you know, the Council Grove area.
There weren't any here?
There were not. So there goes
our chances at a casino.
Well, but, I mean, the trust lands for the Kaw or the Kansa went just north of Americus.
Okay.
So really close. I mean, if you look at it that way and probably a couple of miles to the east of Americus. So close, very close. But yeah, so they're running into Native Americans. But for the most part, there's nothing here. So I have those students imagine, like, this is just open prairie. It's tall grass. It's rolling hills. It's, you know, streams and two rivers.
Yeah, if we only had color cameras back then, we could tell what it looked like.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But they didn't. So they didn't even really have cameras back. I mean, they did, but it was certainly people didn't have it on their phone. Like we do now. You were a trained, you know, photographer that would lug these huge cameras around and take these pictures. But yeah, they were just like, it's here. It's between two rivers. That's great. It's high enough or far enough away between the rivers that it would be safe from flooding. I mean, they really did put a lot of thought into where to get the land. And this particular land was part of a Wyandotte float. And what they are, the Wyandotte nation, tribe, they were, as part of their negotiating with the government.
The compromise?
The compromises that, yeah, and the treaties. They were given this land that was floats. I mean, it wasn't set aside for them, but they could keep it, they could sell it. And so they ended up selling this property to these five men for, you know, not more than $1,800.
So it was cash?
So probably cash. Maybe Venmo. I don't know.
not like furs and weaponry and horses and cattle.
And in fact, that's written in the charter. And we have the original agreement, charter, town charter, where it says each man is to give an equal share of the 1,800, but it wasn't to exceed 1,800. So I don't know if it was exactly 1,800 that was given, or if it was a little under.
Excuse, they bought it from who?
So the Wyandotte. The Wyandotte tribe.
Okay, mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah, right. So they bought the land. And, you know, that original plat just went to 6th Street. So it was east and west were the east and west boundaries of the original plat. And then it was from 6th to 18th. But just a really small sliver to 18th. The bulk of it was 12th to 6th. And then in 1858, about 8-9 months, they expanded and they bought a half section, and then that went to South Avenue is what they bought. Okay. So it expanded.
So this was one of the cases in American history where we did not actually steal the land from the Indians.
We did not steal it.
We
did pay. We paid for it. They paid for it. $1,800.
And what was that? Do we have any idea if that was a good price, or did we kind of steal it, or what?
I don't know. Yeah, I'd have to do a little looking. I mean, I would imagine $1,800 in. And it wasn't, I'm trying to think, it was basically, would it be 640 acres if it's a full section, 640 acres. So we'd have to look to see what that is, 640 acres divided by 18. And then you'd have to compare it to like what the government was doing, you know, when they were renegotiating their treaties with the Native Americans. Because, I mean, they did that with the Kansa had a lot of land. And then they're like, oh, we're going to give you this land, you know, we're going to buy this land, and we're also going to give you 240,000 acres. Well, then years later, they were like, well, now we're going to condense it to 68,000 acres, you know. Yeah. And so just trying to find out what it was per acre looks like.
Yeah, a salary of $1,800 in the mid-19th century was very high, often earned by only top professionals, merchants, or people in specialized roles.
So, and we're looking at 1857 in the, you know, that. So, yeah, I mean, well, and also, you know, not knowing what they have. I mean, they're also looking, you know, okay, they want to start this community, but there's also going to be farming. And that was something, you know, that, okay, they're going to be selling this land off. And so it would be interesting to see how much they sold the lots for. I didn't really delve into that, but I would like to know, you know, what they sold the lots for and how much money they actually made.
Let's take our first break. We'll come back and talk about the name and much, much more. You're listening to the On Air Chat. We're brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. This is KVOE. We are live and local.
Construction jobs don't go away when the weather gets colder. Bruce Davis Construction is available all winter long. When you need commercial dirt work, from demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot, to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction, proud to be involved in recent construction jobs including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendo, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001.
Good morning. Chuck Samples, KVUE News with local news headlines today. Brought to you by Tracy Edwards and Jake Scott, Platinum Financial Solutions, Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC. Members of the Emporia Recreation Commission's steering committee voted yesterday to reduce a potential new sales tax funding mechanism for a new public recreation center, trimming that in half to 0.25%, but also taking Champions Landing officially off of the list of potential new sites for a new recreation center, and also starting to work now towards major renovations at the Lee Barron Recreation Center. Details at KVUE.com. Plans to help displaced workers still aren't finalized yet, but they are developing quickly after Monday's announcement of Hopkins Manufacturing's immediate shutdown. And last week, the leadership of the Lyon County Sheriff's Office and Lyon County Commission were on site for the very first Employee of the Year recognition awards for the department. Details at 12:05 today. Headlines brought to you by Tracy Edwards and Jake Scott, Platinum Financial Solutions, Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC.
Find a bargain or cut a deal. Garage sale listings at garage sale prices. Find out all the details at kvoe.com/garage sale.
Welcome back to the on-air chat. Ron Thomas, Aaron Harder hosting. Lisa Soler, Deputy Co-Executive Director of the Lyon County History Center, soon to be executive director.
I'm not even used to it yet. I'm still passing out my cards that say deputy director.
It'll be so much easier when we get rid of that one co guy.
You know,
who peaked at 65.
Yeah, he's already peaked.
You know, and I'm very frugal, so I have probably about 100 more cards left that say deputy director, and I was like, I'm still passing them out. I didn't even scratch it out or anything.
Yeah, we're going to let you know, please, if you want a Lisa Soler card. Stop down to the history center.
It's going to be worth some money in a couple of years.
I think I have like 1,200. They give us like 1,000 cards when we become city commissioners. Mm-hmm. I think I have 998 of them left.
I'll take one before you leave.
You might want to think about that. We just had a Honus Wagner baseball card go for like $5 million this week.
I saw that.
That was a triple A rated one.
Wow. Oof.
Thank goodness back then they didn't put Honus Wagner's in bicycle spokes.
No kidding. I've got a Lisa Soler deputy director card.
Yeah. One of a
mint
kind.
Condition.
Mint condition.
There's not even a deputy director there anymore. Okay. Let's talk about the name a little. So a lot of people think they just named it, but they had this company, Emporia Town Company, formed.
Yeah, they already had it, but they also knew what they were looking at because it truly was a business venture. And most communities that were started were business ventures, but they wanted to get away from what was happening in Lawrence, and they really were pretty purposeful with getting away from the violence that was happening. And maybe they also, the fact that they had been prisoners of war and they were part of that probably even gave them more incentive to let's get out of Dodge even though Dodge wasn't even a thought.
But they can accomplish their values without politicizing it.
And they knew they needed to go further west. And probably, obviously south. They knew they needed to get away. So Emporia was like the western edge of the area, for quite some time. When they created the bogus legislature created their original 33 counties, we were right there on that line of the western. I think Chase County was obviously a little western as well. But anyway, so they knew they wanted this to be a marketplace. They knew they wanted this. So according to the Our Land, A History of Lyon County, it was a publication in 1976 for the bicentennial. The company decided to name the new town Emporia for a city-state in northern Africa in ancient Carthage. G.W. Brown got the idea for the name while reading Rollins, A History of the Carthaginians, and noted the reference to Emporia, a flourishing market center on the African coast and founded by the Greeks. So that's the name. But if you think of the names of the streets in Emporia, there is no Main Street. It's commercial. It's merchants. They were also thinking very governmental, so Constitution and Congress, and you have Market Street. And and so even the naming of the streets was very business-oriented to some degree. So I think they were pretty deliberate with the name and the street names and truly making this as a place where people are going to come
business.
For business.
Yeah.
For business.
And we were anything but the Wild West here, right?
Oh.
Anything but the Wild West.
Yeah, exactly. And they wrote that in the charter. I mean, the charter prohibits spirits, you know, alcohol. You cannot
make. No gambling, right?
No gambling. And if you were found guilty of gambling or dealing with alcohol or trying to sell it or make it, you would forfeit your land. There, that was it. They really wanted.
That'll make you not do it.
Yeah, yeah. Kidding, yeah.
Well, and they understood, you know, I mean, and that was pretty typical for the temperance movement. And I say this also knowing the history, you know, so Plum was very involved once the town was established and, you know, okay, no alcohol, but yet he's the one who brought Fred Mackey from Topeka to put a brewery on the outskirts of town. So again, he was also a businessman.
Not in the town though.
But not in the town. I mean, it, you know, people can drink it, just, you know.
People can pay me for it, just
yeah,
not in Emporia.
Yeah. So, I mean, Plum knew what he was doing. So yeah, so that's the name. That's the charter of.
It'd be interesting to know if that brewery thrived, how.
Oh, it did.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
It was so Mackey had started in Topeka, and that's what he was known for, was the beer. And Plum was like, okay, you got to come down here again, but you're going to have to build your brewery on the outskirts of town. So it was north of you know, ESU, today ESU.
Yeah.
Just right on the outskirts. But they were also like, but you're not going to sell it in here. You're not going to sell it in town. We're going to be pretty strict about that, and they were.
Well, if he was the only game in town, he probably did pretty well.
He
was at.
He did. And he did really well, but he lost most of the money. Mackey lost most of his money fighting prohibition, you know, and really the nail in the coffin of the brewery was when Kansas went to a statewide prohibition in the 1880s, like I think 1882. Like, that was it. Like, he could get away with selling at other places when Emporia had the prohibition. But once Kansas went statewide, that was it. He wasn't able to sell it. And he spent all his money fighting it and trying to get it repealed and lawyers and everything else. And so he actually didn't have a lot of money at the time of his death. But he went down fighting, Mackey. Yeah. He definitely went down fighting.
Were we, what about this Athens in the Plains that we, Emporia has been referred to?
So Athens in the Plains comes a little bit later, and it really is more reflective of the people that are coming here to give programs, to be speakers, to give performances. So, you know, Athens, ancient Athens was this.
Arts and scholars.
Arts and scholars, absolutely.
Well, we had two colleges here.
Right? We had two colleges, and that was unheard of to have two four-year universities in a Kansas town. We had the Emporia Business College that, even though it was, you know, kind of the equivalent of the tech college, it was still another avenue for education. But because we had C of E, College of Emporia, and the Kansas State Normal / the Kansas State Teachers College, they were able to bring in these notable speakers, you know, early on. And not only that, but we also had the Whitley Opera House. We had Jay's Opera House. We had these venues that
we had a lot of culture.
We had a lot of culture, and we had some incredible speakers that have been, you know, that have come here. Whether it's, you know, for women's, you know, suffrage, we had Susan B. Anthony speaking here. We've had presidents come, and not just, you know, William Allen White, even though he was definitely really good about, you know, being friends, you know, with presidents and bringing them in because of his platform with the newspaper, we were just able to bring in some incredible speakers. I mean, even today we get, you know, some really good speakers and artists that come in. And so that's kind of stayed. But yeah, that's where the Athens of the Prairie okay. comes in, just the caliber of people coming in. You're smiling over there, Aaron.
I just love learning about the history of it.
All right, yeah. All right. So we had, okay, so it's this business venture. They name it Emporia. Now, one thing, and it was really interesting because we will get research requests. And here a while ago, probably within the last year, I got one, and they were asking who was the surveyor of the original property.
And Steve Brosmer.
Brosmer.
I was going to say, that'd be my choice.
Not the original.
That'd be my guess.
But he is the go-to person when I have questions about property.
He's been doing it that long, I think.
Pretty much.
And his family's been doing
it.
Exactly. I mean, he comes from you know...
Surveying blood.
Surveying blood, absolutely. But he, even though he's not originally from here, just like me, you know, but he's delved into the history. So we had a research request from somebody who was like, you know, okay, Oliver Phillips, and we've heard of Phillips Station, north... of Emporia, kind of the north part of Lyon County. We've talked about Oliver Phillips before. Well, he surveyed, and I was like, I'm not sure about that. So I did a little research, and there is another gentleman by the name of C.F. Oakfield, who I think is the one who actually surveyed Emporia.
Did it stand for Columbus?
I don't know what. I was trying to find it, and I kind of ran out of time. But according to field notes, and the city of Emporia has done a wonderful job putting stuff like all these older documents online, or at least the transcriptions of these older documents. So I was able to find it online through the city of Emporia website. The field notes say there was a stone post set by C.F. Oakfield in the survey of the Emporia town site. So I had to tell this family member of Oliver Phillips that, sorry, your great-great-great-great-grandfather or whoever it was, your family member, your ancestor was not the person who did the survey, and they just refused to believe me. And even though when I, you know, primary resources, they still were like, and it is true that Oliver Phillips was also a surveyor. I don't know, you know, again, this information was part of a primary resource.
Yeah, a while ago. This is a while ago.
And it was
folks.
A while ago.
Yeah.
But I loved imagining these limestone posts that actually literally marked the corners of the original plat.
They should have kept
them. Yeah, they should have kept them. Yeah.
I know. And they probably broke or something. It's limestone. They probably broke. But yeah, I wish we had that in our collection.
I'm trying to like think. What's at East Street and 6th Avenue? Is that housing?
Yeah,
just
I think
short
it is.
Of
yep.
the tracks.
Yep.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
East and 12th.
East and 12th would have been the original. Yeah.
Does that come up to Dillon's? Does East Street come up to Dillon's?
No,
west of there, isn't it?
It's west. Yeah. Yep.
And then you have West Street on the other. On this side of town.
I think West and 12th is definitely housing.
Yes.
Or is that where the...
West and 12th is, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that where Riverside, the floral shop is?
Oh, once.
On 12th and West?
12th and West.
Maybe.
Rural then West Street, right?
Yes. And there's actually a little poem, and I didn't bring it, but they have these poems, you know, because we had so many people coming for the schools, you know, ESU and C of E, that they created this little poem, and I'll have to bring it next time. But it talks about the order. There was a man with a strong constitution who was headed to Congress and headed west. I mean, it kind of goes like along those lines for how they were trying to memorize it.
Yeah, Guffler Mansion there.
Guffler Mansion.
12th and West.
Okay, 12th and West. Okay.
So right there
was like, I got a map in my hand. Why don't I just use it?
Technology. So yeah, so there were actual limestone posts out there for a while. And then...
Yeah, West and 6th is that... It used to be the aluminum recycling little thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right there. Dan's rent to own.
Okay.
Gotcha.
I'll get to East Street in a second.
Well, you know, and again, it goes back to, you know, when I'm...
Oh, East Street would be just south of Eastside Community Park.
At East
and 6th.
Yeah. Yeah.
And okay. That would be just to the east of the senior center.
Okay,
at 12th and East.
There it is.
There's a visual for the original township.
Well, and I had a quote. So what was really cool. Okay, so going back to the
that was $18,000, right?
$1,800.
$1,800. It was $1,800.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
About $70,000 in today's dollars.
Yeah, which still doesn't feel like a lot.
You couldn't buy that today for
$70,000. Yeah. Exactly. You're not going to do that.
But I mean, for the Wyandotte tribe, it's probably quite a bit of money.
It was probably quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We still need to find out if that was a ripoff or not.
Yeah. I think it was. I now have my homework.
But they probably all were. I guess I'll say that.
It sounds like a ripoff, but
I bet they all were.
Well, and they had actually, and Steve Rosemer would know this, but I think they had like 20 floats. I mean, I could be a little over on that, but they didn't have just one float. The Wyandotte, you know, tribe had multiple.
So they had somewhere. They had somewhere to go easily.
For sure. But you know. Thinking of – so going back to the five guys, the last one to survive was Brown. So he was the oldest. He lived to be 94 years old, and he died in 1915.
Did he die here?
No, he was in Illinois.
Okay.
And, yeah, after
– sounds like he didn't peak at 65.
No, he did not. But he actually came back to Emporia for the 50th anniversary of the founding. And so they had a big 4th of July celebration, a multi-day celebration here in town in 1907. And they invited Brown back. And he gave the speech. And I often wonder, you know, when I'm doing the research and especially, you know, with the people trying to get into their heads, like, what are they thinking? And so they asked him to come back. He gave a speech, but the last line of his speech was, "It is evident the enchanter has been here with his magic wand and has touched into being all the secret springs of life." Like, how poetic to explain Emporia. Like,
I guess he was happy the way things turned out.
I mean, he was fascinated. And
I could have used that at the end of my State of the City.
There you go.
There you go. You could have stolen that.
Surprised Trump didn't use it last night.
He probably would have if he was in tune.
He's ever read George Washington Brown?
Yeah, there you go.
So do we have any ancestors? Do you still know of any of the five that...
Definitely Plums. There are ancestors not here.
Think about that. Let's take our second break.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll come back, talk about that and some of the early day businesses.
Yeah.
You're listening to the On Air Chat. We're brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. This is KVOE. We are live and local.
For quality concrete and reliable delivery, trust Eagle Creek Ready Mix in Emporia. With over 30 years of experience and their own rock quarry, they control quality from the ground up. From driveways and patios to commercial and agricultural jobs, they've got the mix you need when you need it. Call 620-208-8080 or visit EagleCreekReadyMix.com. Eagle Creek Ready Mix, built on rock solid service and quality from the ground up.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. During his State of the Union address, President Trump signaled he would prefer a diplomatic solution with Iran on finalizing a nuclear deal. President Trump also accusing Iran of developing nuclear weapons. ABC's Patrick Grevel has more and reaction.
Iran responded to President Trump's comments in the State of the Union pretty fierily, saying that he was lying, saying it's all part of a big lie. But, you know, going into these talks, Iran has repeatedly said that it will not ever seek to have a nuclear weapon. Its foreign minister has said that. They say they do, though, want to have a peaceful nuclear program, to have nuclear power, and that they will not give that up.
Former Harvard President and Treasury Secretary Larry Summers announcing today he will resign from his academic and faculty appointments at Harvard at the end of the academic year. That according to a Harvard spokesperson, adding that the resignation was made, quote, in connection with the ongoing review by the university of documents related to the Jeffrey Epstein documents released by the government. This is ABC News.
Join Ron Thomas and Chuck Samples Monday through Friday at 7:15 for the Newsmaker segment. A different guest and topic daily on KVOE 1400 AM and 96.9 FM. Live and local.
Welcome back to the On Air Chat. Ron Thomas, Aaron Harder hosting. Lisa Soler from the Lyon County History Center is our guest. We're talking about the early days of Emporia.
Early days.
About 169 years ago, early days.
Yeah.
And Ron had asked right before we went to break, are there any relatives still around?
And as far as I know, no. Not around here. There might be, well, from Preston Plum, direct lineage, no. But I think, you know, he had, so when Preston moved out here, he was like, I'm going to bring the rest of the family out. I mean, so his parents came, his siblings came. So I think there's some family members from George Plum, who was Preston's brother. But the whole family came out. Ellen Plum never married, so there was no direct descendants from her. But there's a couple from George, just not from Preston. So, but there is family. I mean, there's definitely people out there. We were on the break. We were talking about Joanna Wickham, the author who wrote The Forgotten Senator, which is just a wonderful book about Preston Plum and his life. And she's been in contact with family members that had artifacts and different family memorabilia and mementos.
Did any of them pass here? Or did they move back, quote unquote, from where they came?
I don't think they ever went back. I know some moved to California, but for the most part, they did not go back to the East. The East Coast or Ohio or wherever, you know, they're from.
Sure.
So
let's get into, we've mentioned one for sure, and that was a brewery on the outskirts of town.
Brewery, yeah. And that came a couple of years later.
Yeah, but let's talk about some of the early businesses gentlemen envisioned.
Well, and that was the key, and that's, they knew, even though Preston Plum was the only one who lived here, I mean, they knew they had to have somebody live here to make it. And the fact that he invested money, he needed to sell it. And that's why he chose to be, you know, to open a newspaper, the Kansas News, so he could start publishing and getting information back east. You know, hey, move to Emporia.
Yeah, this place is awesome.
Yeah, this place is awesome. It's the loveliest site. You know, he had to sell it to make his money back.
The Enchanter's coming.
Yeah, the Enchanter. Yeah. And so the new town quickly grew. John Hammond, which is still a name that you hear of, you know, they're still family members from the Hammond family, Hammond Park. Anyway, John Hammond built the town's first building. It was a wood frame structure on the northwest corner of 6th and Commercial. And this building was everything. It was a boarding house. It, you know, government, you know, it was a broker house. Government, you know, happened there. Educational, religious, all this stuff was happening in this building. And then other buildings, Hornsby and Fick store. Hornsby and Fick were, I think, and I don't know if it's the Hornsby family of Columbus Hornsby. I looked and looked and looked and couldn't find.
Had to
you
be.
You would think it had to be.
I'm almost sure, though, it was Columbus Hornsby.
He would be so upset.
Hornsby's not like Smith or Jones, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, couldn't find, you know, Columbus Hornsby's in town today. Couldn't find anything. I'm assuming it was Columbus Hornsby.
I wonder if Bruce Hornsby's related, Ron.
Oh, we got to, yeah. I should.
It's the only other Hornsby I know.
Yeah. Track it down. Are you related to Columbus Hornsby? One of the five founders of Emporia, Kansas. So you have Hornsby and Fick, who had a store, and it was ran by C.V. Eskridge. We had the Emporia House, which was a hotel that was first ran by a couple from New York, Mr. and Mrs. Clapp, C-L-A-P-P. Okay. So double P. She was Mrs. Clapp was the first woman in Emporia. Outside of Native Americans, I'm sure they would venture into the area.
The first woman
but she,
to live here?
She was the first woman to live here to be a resident was Mrs. Clapp. I can't find her first name, which is always fun when I'm researching because that was women went by, you know, Mrs. J.H.
Okay, yeah.
Clapp. And so I can't find her first name. So that's going to be something I do when I'm up at 2 o'clock in the morning. Preston Plum, of course, founded the Kansas News. So all these businesses are happening. They're bringing in you know, somebody who's a blacksmith. They brought in a doctor, C.C. Slocum, who is the husband of one of my favorite women from Emporia, Juliet Slocum. And I know I've talked about her during Women's History Month, that she was a suffragist and really fought for, you know, women's suffrage and the right to vote. And her husband joined the military during the Civil War and just never came back.
So, didn't pass away.
Didn't pass away. Oh, no. Didn't pass away. But just never came back. You know, again, they were back east, from back east, and they came here, you know, for whatever reason, you know, but, and I don't know if there, what connection, if there were any connections on why they came out here, if they knew somebody or, you know, what the connection was, but he was like,
saw a pamphlet from the Emporia Town
Council. Probably. Yeah, maybe. But he was like, nah, I'm not going back to Emporia. So after the war, or maybe he came back just for a brief amount of time, but in the books that I read, that recounts those early days, they were just like, he disappeared. Like, that's it. And I do want to also talk about, you know, not only the businesses, but also the books where I got all this information. The founding fathers and those original people did a wonderful job of record keeping and making sure these stories are passed down. So one of the first books that was put together was The Annals of Emporia and Lyon County by Jacob Stotler. And he wrote that in 1882.
Wow.
And I mean, there are photos in this book for 1882. It is very well done. And I probably go back to that book a little bit more than these other books because it was written where people were still alive that came in 1857.
Yeah.
And so it's not, you know, it's obviously not far removed. We have three county plat maps, 78, 1901, and 1918, or I could be wrong. Yeah, ish. I know it's the 1878 and the 1918. I might be a little off on the middle one. But again, they give history of the county and the city. In 1906, there's this book called The Blue Book of Lyon County. And again, it was given with compliments from the Newman Dry Goods store. You know, they were giving this out, but the photographs are just phenomenal in it. And it's just, you know, giving, it's not as much the history as what's happening in 1906. And the photos are fantastic. 1922, the Old Settlers Association put out a little booklet called Pioneers. 1929, Laura French did The History of Emporia in Lyon County. And then there was kind of a dry spell. Our Land in Book 1976 for the Bicentennial. Black Emporia in 2001 by Dr. Carol Marshall with Nellie Essex and Elizabeth Williams. And then Steve Hanchu and Dr. Darla Mayline, I always like to add the doctor to her, they did a book with Arcadia Press, and it's primarily photos, and they do it, you know, chronological.
Yeah.
And so, again, but and then with the museum, the Historical Society, you know, history has always been important to the residents. Yes, buildings have been torn down. And
so what's the oldest building? Howe House?
No. What have we figured out? The Howe House is one of the oldest ones in 1867. But I really think there's a couple of older buildings downtown that have been covered or changed enough where it's they don't obviously they don't look the same. In Emporia maybe the Howe House, but I know there's a couple of others downtown that are a little bit older, like the corner across the southwest corner of Mechanic and Sixth, so right across from where what's the Mexican food place that's there now? El Mamar.
Southwest corner. Southwest west of the auditorium.
I think that one has been here a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back where Babes used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I think that one might be the oldest.
We got to go. Yeah. But I'm going to tell you guys, you can find Columbus Falls Hornsby's grave in Oak Hill Cemetery in Lawrence.
Okay.
And, you know, I think Bruce Hornsby might be a relative because his band was Bruce Hornsby and the Range. There's a lot of Range around here, right?
All those connections. Yeah. It's all about the connections.
It's all coming together.
I mean, Columbus had to get busy because he died at 33. You never know.
Yeah. I'll see. I'll do the. Yeah. I'll do my homework.
Yeah. Thanks for joining, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the on-air chat. We've been brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. For commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more, call Bruce Davis Construction, 620-342-5001. The noon hour is coming up here next on KVUE AM 1400 and 96.9 FM. We are live and local.
This is Ella Reed, president of the Meredosine Valley FFA chapter, wishing everyone a happy National FFA Week. With 42 members strong, our chapter brings real-world application into the classroom every day. FFA is more than just agriculture. It's leadership, teamwork, and preparing for future careers.